Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents of children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word. It's not suitable for children, so don't listen to it when they're around. Easy, really.
Hello, Kate.
We are back in the daytime.
Yay. Everyone's gone to school.
Everyone.
It just still makes me happy.
Yeah, but you've still got wonderful husband
at
home.
Oh, yes, he's still home. Yeah, that's challenging.
In Victoria, there's still a work from home rule.
Yes, so he's still home.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how long for. So no, I think it's going to be a while.
I reckon it's end of June. I think the end's
really?
In sight. I don't know if I'm telling myself that.
Oh.
But because the city's really suffering.
Yes,
there's no
right,
one in
course.
There. So I think they have to. It's just the public transport they're worried about.
Yes, okay.
So I get that. But anyway, we'll see. We will see.
Yeah. I mean, there's perks to having him home. Like, there is flexibility.
Oh, yeah. And I think I've never had that in my whole life. To be like, can you go to the bus stop or...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So that's a perk.
Yeah. And the other day I drove Molly to school and then I came back and I saw him walking back from taking Miss Nine. He's walking along with the dog.
He's having a great time.
It just looks so funny because he's not normally around.
Yeah.
You know, just trotting down the road with the dog.
I know.
It was cute.
It is cute. So there might be a tiny bit of background noise because we are getting a new fence.
Yes.
Because we were so lucky and mid-pandemic our fence literally fell over. The whole thing just
Kate,
collapsed.
Yes.
So that was good. Anyway, you wouldn't
just
believe
a little
this,
bit of soaring.
But fences, that's what they're called, aren't they?
Yeah.
People who fence.
Yeah.
Flat out during the pandemic.
Really?
Never been so busy
what?
Because everyone's sitting at their window of their house looking at their
fence
going,
falling over.
Geez, my fence is shit. I need to get that fixed. So
well,
it took us weeks to get them here.
Right.
So I wasn't going to say, no, I'm recording a podcast.
No,
so,
that's
yeah,
fine.
Because now the chickens and the dogs can escape.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, right.
And the children.
Yeah.
And today, Mandy, very exciting. We've got three microphones.
Yay.
Although one of them is in Brisbane,
Yay!
So not here.
Yay!
But yes, Lisa's here.
Lisa is our friend. Welcome to the pod bar via Discord.
Hello from sunny Brisbane.
Oh,
it is sunny here.
It is sunny here in Melbourne, but it's cold. We are so happy to have you on our podcast.
Yeah. An original P.
An original, yep.
Yes. It goes back a long way, doesn't it? Gosh,
yes.
It seems like yesterday. Jeez.
So we met Lisa as part of the Australian Multiple Births Forum, mm-hmm. didn't we? So probably,
yes.
Maybe like 2007 or 8, something like that. What do you think,
yeah,
Lisa?
Yeah, my girls were born in 2007, halfway through.
Okay,
so I joined the forum when I was still pregnant. So,
oh,
yeah,
did
beginning
you?
Of 2007.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we were quite new. When did we join?
I think 2007.
Yeah.
I think my girls were about two. Yeah.
No, yep, I joined younger, when I was pregnant. Yeah. Oh. Sorry.
No, that's good. It's okay. I remember all the people joining when they were pregnant.
Do you?
Yeah, because there was, you know, all the different groups.
Yes,
of
there
like,
was.
You know,
there was pregnancy groups.
And pregnancy, and identical pregnancy, fraternal pregnancy.
Yeah.
We had a really interesting pregnancy, though, in that I have identical twins, but they had two separate placentas and two separate sacs.
Oh. So did you know they were identical then?
Oh, they kept telling us they're not identical because it's two sacs, two placentas. So they're obviously not identical. And then they came out and they were 300 grams difference, but because they were so small, you could really, you know, they looked way different.
Yes.
And so at first we're like, okay, yeah, we've got non-identical twins. And then as they grew, we're
yours are so identical. Yes.
They kind of look alike. And then that twin, you know how you could sign up to that
twin research study. Yeah, the teeth.
Yeah. Yes, actually, I think you're the one who told me about it, Mandy.
I don't know.
Can you remember Mara?
It.
We've got a mutual friend, Mara, who was big on the forum. I think she was queen of the forum for us.
She was pretty good.
And
yeah.
She said, and I know she listened, so hi, Mara. My boys are not identical. There were two sacs and two placentas.
Gosh.
And we were all like,
oh, rubbish.
They are a mirror of each other.
Oh, those two. You couldn't.
Nothing delighted me more than when her DNA
me
test
too.
Came back.
They are absolutely identical.
Absolutely. So there was a few trickers in there.
Oh, dear.
Yep, absolutely. It happened to us as well. So apparently when it splits so early, you get the two sacs, two placentas. They're not. Yeah, it's really fascinating. So, yeah, we got the tests probably when they were about 1.5, 2 as well. So it was finally like, confirmation that they're definitely.
Well, let's get to asking our questions and then we'll hear everything. We want to hear everything. So.
Sorry, we're friends with Lisa, so, you know, it's just going to be one of those episodes.
Where we just throw random stuff in.
Yeah. So the first question we ask is, do you have any music or a song or a band that gets you through good times or bad times or?
Look, I honestly love any music that gets me moving and gets me singing. You know, I can completely change my mood just getting into music. But the one that just came to mind just then for some reason was I Want to Break Free by Queen.
I want to break free.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That vacuuming.
That's totally what we need right
totally.
Now.
Totally.
Every once in a while, that one, when that comes on, you can just go to town with that one.
You really
one.
Can.
Yeah.
Queens. All good to sing to.
Like
really sing.
Yeah, like belt it out.
And dance. Like they just get you moving.
They really do.
Ah. Yeah. Well,
great song.
Can you tell us what awards you won in school, if you won any?
You're going to laugh at this one. I've won a couple of awards. One was in grade 5, which was graduation for me in Canada. So we finished school, primary school in grade 5, and then you go off to middle school. And I won the Sportsman Award.
Wow.
And I'd never played a sport.
Tell us more.
How did you win?
I have no idea. I just remember sitting there going, what? No, they've got the wrong name. This can't be right. I never played a sport, hated sports when I was a kid.
Some other Lisa is still telling the story and they gave it to the other Lisa.
Probably.
There's that one. And then there was one in high school. Towards the end of high school, I won. This actually was at graduation too. I won. I got 96% in my parenting course.
Oh! What would you give yourself right now?
Oh, 30?
Wow, what did you have to do? Carry around an egg or something? Or what did you do in the parenting course?
Oh, it was actually a really fascinating course. I took it as kind of it was just an elective, so I could do whatever I wanted, and you can get any percentage you wanted because I didn't need it for my graduation. Right. So I was like, hey, I'll do this course. And it was actually really fascinating. It was about birth and it was about pregnancy and parenting, you know, obviously parenting and kids and stuff. And I rubbed that one in my husband's face every once in a while. I'm the one who got 96%.
Wow.
I think all decisions should come through me because I got A+ for
pretty
parenting.
Pretty much. I think we all need to take that test.
I don't want to take that test.
I'd fail.
Minus 20%. That's fantastic.
And we've sort of already answered this, but, you know, it's a rite of pee podcast passage. Yes. Why are you a pee, Lisa?
Oh, gosh. Well, as you know, we met through Amber early on when I discovered I was having twins and I joined up. And then along the journey, everything seemed to be going okay until we, you know, started to notice that things weren't developing quite the same way as other kids. And so we... our twins were diagnosed with global developmental delay, which at the time is we don't know what's going on, but there's delays in a couple of areas or more. For us, it was more than a couple of areas. And so since then, gone on to be diagnosed with intellectual disabilities of varying degrees in my twins. And they both have autistic features. One has been formally diagnosed, ASD level one, and the other has very mild sort of cerebral palsy diagnosed based on MRI findings. So kind of a mishmash of a few different things happening.
And you also are a professional.
Yes. Yes. Yes, which was interesting. When my kids were going through all that diagnosis and I was going through the, you know, adjustment to everything and trying to wrap my head around things, trying to find another mental health professional that actually understood and didn't just try to make me feel better. You know, every time I tried to talk to somebody, they were just like, oh, don't worry, it's not your fault. And oh, don't worry, you know, this will happen or whatever. And it was just really hard to find somebody who actually understood what
you needed.
I
more
was
skill than
about.
That. You needed more skill than just the trite, it wasn't your fault, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your pregnancy?
It was an interesting pregnancy. out of both of my pregnancies, I had hyperemesis gravidarum, which connected with a couple other ladies on the forum as well.
Yes.
We're unfortunate to have to good old Mara. Hi, Mara.
Yeah, Mara was also.
So I remember speaking to Mara about it because she had experienced it as well. And that was a steep learning curve. I know a lot more about it now than I did then. Because even the medical professionals didn't know much at that stage. And what's fascinating is that I've gone on to work in perinatal mental health and I love supporting mums who have HG. I love educating people about it. And our guidelines really haven't changed very much in Australia. It's still very under-researched and under-diagnosed, misdiagnosed. And so that's come a long, long way since then. And they've now discovered it is related to a gene or two, actually. Yes, there is a genetic cause, and they're still doing that research. That's only come out in the past year or two, but it certainly has made parents like myself feel a lot better than the old sort of theories around why people were so sick in pregnancy. It's really fascinating. The psychiatric theories around it were really detrimental to mothers, detrimental.
As if you could induce yourself into being that ill. Like I remember how ill Mara was and that.
I got down to 48 kilos.
I bet. Yeah.
And the irony was is that I worked in eating disorders as well at the time on an inpatient unit. These people were being admitted around the same weight that I felt down to. I had to really, you know, get better and gain my weight back before I could go back to work as well,
of course. I mean,
just generally. But it was an interesting time and a very interesting experience. It was very, very overwhelming. And I couldn't even turn my head, couldn't brush my teeth. Those triggers were really, really bad, for quite a while there.
And
I was very, very fortunate.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say, how long did you have it for, the whole time or?
I'm lucky. I'm really lucky. Around 15 weeks, it really let up.
Right.
And then I was eating up a storm, thank goodness. You couldn't get food away from me. I just kept going. it was all baby.
Yes, all I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know others have struggled right until the delivery of the placenta. Yes. So that I was very fortunate that to not have that be the case. And so I feel very lucky for that. But yeah, that was interesting. But otherwise, it was pretty uneventful. They came a few weeks early.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
So that was 5 weeks early, and we ended up spending a few days on the ward and then down to a NICU for in the what they called the fat farm end of the NICU at the time. And so they were just trying to plump them up. They were the tallest, longest little babies, but they needed chubs. So we were in there to try and chub them up a bit. But we were like, well, we were only there for a week. We probably should have stayed longer.
Yeah.
In hindsight, to be honest, I think they discharged us a little too early, but they did well there and plumped up, and we went home.
So you used to live in Melbourne, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so it was at, I was actually at the hospital where I worked.
Oh, wow.
Where I had my kids. Yeah, it was very handy. I just waddled from the unit over to the
waddling.
My maternity appointments until I was on bed rest. I did get put on bed rest at 31 weeks because I had the thinning cervix and it looked like it might happen quickly. So, yeah, that was 4 weeks of watching the box set of Sex and the City over and over and over again.
This is people, so you know, now who have Netflix, they don't know.
No, box sets. They don't.
Oh, my gosh.
You have to get up, change the DVD or the video.
And they're scratched. Mums don't understand putting that Wiggles DVD in and getting everyone to sit down and pressing play and then it's scratched.
Oh.
They don't understand. Oh, everyone's crying.
The pain. Yes.
I would just like to say that, people.
Yep. And then also the pain of having a, you know, lovely, supportive husband who, well, if you put it back in the box, this wouldn't have happened.
Oh. God, I just found it on the floor.
I just got the Weet-Bix off it and I put it in. I don't know why it's scratched.
Anyway, we digress. Tell us about when did you express? How did you feed the girls?
I tried. They were born without much of a suck reflex. Mm, yeah. So they really struggled with sucking.
Mm. Yep.
And even off the bottle, they struggled. They got really messy. And I remember posting questions on the forum going, what do you guys use? Because my kids, I've got to strip them naked to feed them because they're just, there was formula going everywhere. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? We tried 25,000 different teats for those bottles and different bottles as well and different formulas, and it just wasn't working well. I did try to put them on the breast for a little while. I think there was like a week where I tried one of them. My daughter, who's got more moderate disabilities, I didn't because she just couldn't latch.
Yes.
But my other twin, I tried a little bit, but it just didn't work. So I pumped for about 12 weeks. I would get like so little. I'd get like 50 mils for the day.
I
had nothing.
Yeah. But you tried.
Oh, I tried so hard.
Well, there's a lot of guilt associated with not trying, which there should not be.
No, that's right.
No.
Women aren't celebrated enough for trying. That's what I want to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, and there's so much calories that we expend actually creating breast milk and expressing. Even down on the letdown, there's quite a lot of calories that are used for that letdown.
Yeah.
And what we don't understand and we don't think about is that, you know, if you've got preemie twins and you've got disabilities on board as well and you're trying to deal with all of this, you know, all of the energy that you do have in your body, you need that. You really need it to keep going. And so sometimes that's why the milk hasn't come in. It's not because it's your body safeguarding itself as well and trying to keep it going.
Right. That's so powerful.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So the irony is the next pregnancy I had with the singleton, I had the biggest boobs. I was so planning to not be able to breastfeed. Yeah. I'm like, well, it didn't work the first time, so my body maybe just can't do it.
Yeah.
And I had an abundance of breast milk the second time around.
Wow. So that's really telling too, isn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely. I think back going, wow, you know, that's my body. Just, it was taking care of itself. It was trying to help me take care of my little babies. It wasn't getting a lot of rest. There was no help overnight. No, I was doing every night of the week, except for we got on a roster of doing Friday, Saturday nights, my husband and I. So he would do those and I would sleep. But I just remember being so tired.
Oh,
so,
there's nothing like
tired.
It.
There is no tired
nothing
like that.
There's like it.
No.
I'm just, if you've not had two babies.
No. And I know the higher order multiples are going
here.
But
sorry,
that's not our story, so I'm sorry.
I know.
You win. They always win.
They always win. Yeah. Quads, they win. They trump us by a mile.
And I think with it, it's not, yes, the breastfeeding and the exhaustion is a mighty combination to try and combat. But when you think back to your weeks in the special care nursery, the amount of time, the most amount of time anyone spent with you as a mother was trying to get you to breastfeed.
Yes.
It wasn't telling you you're going to take home preemies. It's going to be different to other people's experiences.
No.
You're going to be paranoid about germs. It was nothing about you. It was just those boobs. You know, and they wouldn't even really look at you. They'd just be holding onto the boobs and then the baby.
Shoving
and
baby's
shoving
mouths on.
Yeah. And so all you leave there thinking is,
that's
this is what
I have
to
do. Yeah, no one's talking about attachment or cuddling or talking to your babies or, you know, gaze at them when you're bathing them or just cuddle them tight when they're having the tube feeds or, you know,
nothing.
No one's, I mean, they might be now.
Maybe.
Maybe, but they certainly didn't then.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
too.
I hope so. I didn't get any of that. I got give them the bottle.
Oh, really?
I had nobody supporting me to breastfeed.
Wow.
And I had no suggestions to breastfeed when we were in the NICU. They actually didn't have a bath until we got home.
Oh, what?
We didn't realize till we got home. We were like, hang on.
They didn't teach you how to do a bath.
My babies.
They didn't.
That's neglect.
Yeah. It is.
Well, it is. That's, you know,
especially
when you've got two
babies.
It
tiny
is.
Little twins.
And also just doing one and then doing the other.
I know.
It's hard enough doing one baby.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry.
I remember the first bath.
I bet you do.
I bet you do.
We were terrified.
Arms and limbs everywhere. You don't know how to hold their
and
head.
And they cry.
Yeah.
Oh. I just remember them just sort of like going, ooh, what is this water thing? You know, the looks on their little faces. We're like, ooh.
You know, before my qualification is a diploma in childcare, but before that it used to be called Mothercraft Nursing. And
yes,
they were in the hospitals doing all of that.
And it was really important.
And it was an important job that's been gone now for, 20 years.
Yeah.
But there's probably space for that.
Oh, 100% there's space
to do all that sort of practical teaching.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Midwives didn't have time to reassure because the midwives are busy.
They're busy.
And we have so many women now who are disconnected from children till they give birth themselves.
Totally.
We don't grow up in a village anymore.
No.
No. Well, where do we learn this stuff other than my parenthood course, which, by the way, I got 96%.
Did you fail the bath? Is that why you didn't get 100%?
I missed that class.
So when you got home, tell us a little bit about those early days and when did you start to suspect things, or you tell us.
Yeah. I honestly don't remember a lot of it. I was so tired.
Yeah.
I remember snippets here and there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that early phase was really quite a blur. And I also, within a few months, started really struggling with postnatal anxiety and depression, more so the anxiety, to be honest, for me than the depression side of things.
Yeah.
And so that certainly affects your memory and it affects your concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore your memory's not very good. And so I've got snippets. I've got snippets from that time. And it was probably more around going actually to the mothers' groups. I didn't get very often. And when I went to the mothers' groups, no one kind of helped me with the twins, and which I found hard because they actually slept really well. They were great, great little sleepers.
Yeah.
But, of course, as soon as you get to the mothers' group, they wouldn't sleep. And they'd be
crying.
And things would be carrying on.
Yeah.
Jiggling,
so I was like,
juggling,
oh.
Yeah.
And you have to stand up. You can't sit with the other women.
Yeah.
And you've got two babies. You're like, I could be doing this at home watching Oprah, to be quite honest.
They might be asleep.
They might be asleep.
Yes, it's a high price to pay,
yeah,
taking two babies out of their routine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went a few times and I met another twin mum there. And it's when her twins, I can't actually remember how many months old they were. I presume between 6 and 8 months, because her twins were starting to sit up and they were starting to roll and they were starting to do some things. Mm. And I was looking at mine going, they're kind of just laying there. They're not doing anything. Yeah. And one seemed a little bit stronger than the other, but our one daughter, her neck, you know, ability to hold up her head was still really compromised. Yeah. And I was going, okay, something's not quite right here. Mm. And when I first spoke to a nurse, I had the visiting, remember how the maternal child health nurses would visit?
Yep.
The one that I had was more interested in watching the news on the television when she came over than the twins. Mm. So it was kind of like, I remember saying
out
to
for
her,
that visit, you know?
Yeah.
I know. So I remember saying to her, how about this? And she's like, oh, no, you know, it's all, you know, it'll come in time, whatever. And eventually I didn't feel very confident in her responses. So I went to a different one. Mm. And even she was like, no, that, you know, I think they're still kind of on par and all of that. And it went from that at 12 months to they were 17 months when we finally saw a paed between 15 and 17 months. And it was 17 months when he diagnosed global developmental delay in the one twin.
Right.
And I think I was a bit protective of the other one because she was like, oh, she's doing okay, you know.
Yeah,
you
know. 100% know what you're saying.
So,
And at that point, did you still have postnatal depression and anxiety? Like had you started having therapy or take antidepressants or whatever? You don't have to say exactly what you did, but was that under control at all or –
Well, I hadn't done anything with the when I had the twins. Mm-hmm. So I basically struggled through. I'm a perfectionist this is why I love working in perinatal mental health, because I try to reach out to the other mums who are perfectionists who don't want to admit this and I can pick it from a mile away because I am one of them. And I just plowed on through, and I did talk to my GP. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
I did talk to her, but I didn't take any medication. Yep. When the girls were 8 months old, I fell pregnant again. To all parents listening, beware of the mini pill.
Also, maybe that was something that you didn't learn at your parenting class either.
Yes!
Because if you grow up in the Yarra Valley, you know the mini pill is rubbish.
Yes, well, I definitely screwed that one up. But
eight
that was
months.
In, you know.
Wow.
8 months. So, and then I had hyperemesis again, actually worse.
Oh, no.
So I was actually laying in bed injecting myself with medication so that I could semi-function for that.
And it must have been very
It was terrible.
That's just insurmountable, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and did you have – are your family in Canada?
Majority. Yeah. Mm. Yep. Yeah. So we didn't have, I didn't have any support really. My mother-in-law helped a little bit now and again.
Yeah.
But the, I think too, I always presented like I was coping.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
You know,
yep.
That perfectionism, like, no, I've got this. And, and when you're just absolutely crumbling inside.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
sometimes
and to
it's
that,
too you know, big to be able to tell, because you're like,
where do I start?
If I take one of these cards out of this deck of cards, it's never going back up. So I can't let the chink out.
Totally.
Yeah.
It was that definitely that perfectionism, like, oh, well, I work in this area. I should be able to do this. You know, all those rules that you have for yourself that you would never tell a best friend.
Never.
Yes.
You would never say that to someone else, but we do it to ourselves. So, I think people kind of thought, okay. Or maybe sometimes I even said, no, I don't need help. And I might have pushed them away as well. That was my kind of thing to do. So I can't remember a lot of it, to be honest, because of everything going on. Mm. And it was when the twin, or when my one twin was diagnosed, my youngest was 5 weeks old. And so she was there. I was just postnatal. The twins were 17 months.
Yes.
And I just, we walked out to the parking lot. And ironically, years before, I'd actually worked in disability. I had been a job coach. I'd run a program in Canada for teenagers with intellectual disabilities and in training for work and post-high school. So I'd actually worked with a large array of teenagers and young adults with intellectual disabilities and learning disabilities. And so I really understood what we were up against. And I remember just going to the parking lot and just, I put the baby down next to the car. My poor husband, he had the twins in the twin pram and the baby there. And I just fell on the ground.
Lisa. Yep.
I bet. Yep. I can. Yeah. Because where do you go?
It was hard. Yeah. Sorry.
No, please let it out. People need to know that that's what the... It's actually a physical thing that takes over you. It's not just, it's hard.
So just knowing what we were going to be up against, knowing, you know, speech therapy, occupational therapy, specialist appointments, medical, you know, what sort of medical conditions will come? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? So, it was a big adjustment period, that's for sure.
And I think it's human nature to sort of go to the worst point, isn't it? You know, because and then maybe from that you build back and work out how you're going to cope. And we don't mean the worst point in that this is, you know, a tragedy. We mean, how am I going to cope as a human? How am I going to parent this really well? How am I going to be the person that these beautiful twins need? Like what?
Absolutely.
What's going to be required of me?
And you're already at your maximum. You've got 17-month-old twins and a 5-week-old.
Yeah, and you've probably still got stitches and cracked nipples. I mean, far out.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That is a story.
Oh, yes. And that's when the postnatal anxiety really kicked up a notch for me. It was when that period was the worst period for me. And I think, you know, one thing that a lot of people don't realize, and being a mental health professional myself, that the research shows that if we have a history of our own traumas and our own things that we've gone through, particularly traumas, and they don't have to be big T traumas. They can be things that we experience as traumas, so a subjective trauma, and our own attachment theory styles as well, that has a huge part to play on how we see a situation. So, you know, for myself, I have a history of trauma. I have a history of attachment difficulties. I have a history I have a history, and so that colors how we see a particular situation as well. It's not simply going, okay, we've got this and let's move on. But we also have to consider, what's this person's history? What's this mother's, father's history? And how are they going to see this differently? It's like wearing different colored glasses. So, for example, if we're feeling really secure in ourselves, and by secure I'm talking about sort of attachment theory, which I won't go into great detail, but, you know, attachment theory has a lot to do with our upbringing and our sense of self in the world and how safe the world is and how safe other people are. So if we've got different styles of attachment that aren't ideal, then we tend to see the environment in a more negative way, and we tend to pick up on things in the environment that can be not make us feel secure, basically. And so we're on alert constantly. And that's something that we have to, I think, you know, I don't know how much that's come up over all the podcasts you've done, but when we talk about how parents are adjusting and how they're going, it's not just about that situation. It's about their entire history as well. Behind them. And so, you know, as a mental health professional, whenever anyone comes to me, it's about listening non-judgmentally and being really curious, what's this person's backstory as well? And how is that coloring this situation right now for them?
Massive.
It's huge. It's huge. It's not just like, okay, here's the situation and we'll just deal with it. It's your whole backstory comes with it. And if you have a history of trauma, if you have a history of attachment difficulties, parenting issues, you know, there's lots of different things that go with that. Anxiety and depression, of course, as well. You know, that will color it. That will color how you adjust to anything. Really?
Thank you for teaching us all of that.
Powerful.
Very powerful.
Yep.
I'm so thankful you talked about that.
Yeah.
How about, so what did the anxiety present like? It was panic attacks, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. I've had panic attacks. That's a commonplace in my birth family. I was adopted, so I do know that there's some sort of background there with panic attacks. Absolutely. What's particularly interesting, though, in anxiety is that everyone's different.
And
it's idiosyncratic. Even though we might all have panic attacks, it can be very different presentation, and it can be very different reasons why it's happening. And at the time for me, it was just feeling wired constantly, wired but really tired at the same time. And I would have, I think I had some panic attacks at the time, but it was, I remember trying to go to one of the breastfeeding things at the hospital after we had gone home. And I think the girls were probably about 12 weeks old-ish. And I thought, I'll go in. And I didn't want to drive in with the kids by myself. And I just didn't want to be alone. And I remember telling my husband, I don't want to go. Like, I don't want to drive all that way. And he's like, oh, you'll be fine. Have a nice afternoon of it.
Well, he was going to have a nice afternoon.
Such good advice.
He was like, take them, go.
I wonder what he was getting up to.
He was trying to encourage you.
And because
it doesn't make sense when you're looking from the outside.
No.
But when you're on the inside, it makes perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely. You want to stay safe. And so staying in your whatever your safe zone is, and everyone's different. I just wanted to be at home really most of the time, which is not like me, you know, and I'm not that type of person generally. So that should have been warning bells for everybody going, oh, Lisa's not going out. So, yeah, that's how it was, more staying at home and wanting to be there. And eventually I started some medication, which helped immensely. I finally got over that perfectionism that I should be able to do this on my own. When, you know, when I think about it, for me, it was the lack of sleep. I notice even, you know, nowadays, if there's a lack of sleep, my nervous system does not cope the next day very well at all.
Well, it just affects our brains. People don't realize that.
For me, when I have had times of anxiety, I almost drift off to sleep, and then I wake up wide awake and my heart races and then I can't sleep for a couple of hours. So you're compounding the no sleep with the anxiety, and then you know, you're like, I can't get out of this fucking loop. You know?
I better go talk
to someone again.
I remember on the forum, maybe you went into the, or I was following some of your story and I came to visit you. Because for me, you were the first person that I could see that had something similar to my story. And so I remember coming to visit your house, and I was like, there's two toddlers and a brand new baby. My goodness. I don't know if I brought my girls with me. I don't know. I can't remember.
I remember you bringing your girls.
Oh, okay.
But I remember reaching out to you first.
Oh,
I remember
did you?
Going to a dinner. Yeah, I remember going to a dinner, and at that dinner you had mentioned cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And we were pre-diagnosis at that stage.
Right.
And things that you were saying, and I things I was sort of researching online, I was going, I think that might be it. I think we might, you know, have something in common here.
Yeah.
And of course, all the while, you know, really thinking, well, is this physical? Is it, you know, intellectual?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Right.
And kind of hoping, you know, there was more physical than intellectual.
Yes.
I'm ashamed to say, but, you know, I'd worked in that area. I've been around lots of people with learning disabilities, and I just,
You don't have to be ashamed to say that. I think I'm speaking for myself here. It's just because, you know, it's a harder road for your child.
That's
it's not.
Right.
You don't have to be ashamed of that. You know, this is a hard road they've got now. So,
Yeah, you don't want hard roads for your kids.
You
just want to make it as easy as it can be for them.
Every parent ever.
That's right.
Yeah. And if our society was better set up, you know, for people of all everything, you know, just everything, whether it's, you know, race or it's disability or it's whatever, if we were better set up, it just would be better. We wouldn't probably worry about this stuff.
No,
like, okay, well, You know, it's all there and it's, yep. you know, set up, but it's still the case where we have to fight so hard and work so hard for things and convince people and, yeah. and, yeah, so even the other day, one of my youngest friends was saying, there's a part in their school where kids go with learning disabilities and yep. usually some of the kids who have behavioral difficulties, and they go there for extra support and more one-on-one learning, which is fantastic. But she was trying to describe it and she said, oh, you know, I sometimes, you know, go to this place to help out because the kids in there, their brains don't work right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and she meant all, you know, she was well-meaning, absolutely yeah. well-meaning and lovely little soul.
Yeah.
And so it was an opportunity for me to say, well, you know what? Their brains are unique.
Yeah.
They work differently, yes, but it's a unique difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we can look at learning the stock standard way in the classroom, but there's lots of different ways of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to go there and learn in this, you know, different way than the stock standard way because they're unique.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, yeah, oh, unique. Beautiful. That's a good word.
It is a good word.
It is a good word.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. So, I know number one daughter always says to me, because I wear glasses, and she said, if hardly anybody had eyesight like yours, we never would have done anything about it, Mum. You wouldn't be able to drive.
Mm.
You wouldn't be able to read half the things. You would get headaches every day.
Yeah.
She's like, but because a lot of people have eyesight that's impaired, we decided we'd fix that and now you can live a life the same as everybody else.
Oh.
And it's just so powerful. She really sees it as an OT, yes. like, oh, we've decided the things that matter.
Yeah.
And that matters.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
you know, access to an education that works for everyone, nah, that doesn't matter.
No.
You know? So, yeah.
I have to say, moving up to Queensland from Victoria has been an interesting eye-opening experience in terms of education. It has, there was a, I'm going to get this wrong because I didn't research it before I came on today, but there was, that the state looked into the education of kids with disabilities a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so they implemented a bunch of standards for education. And since then, it has changed remarkably from what it was a decade ago. So we've actually experienced nothing but fantastic support and education since moving up as compared to in Victoria.
Oh.
And we lived in the UK as well for a couple of years. And that was, I mean, oh, chalk and cheese in terms of support, to be honest.
Tell us, spell that out.
Yeah.
I think one of the best things was when we were there. You know how I'm just used to fighting for things. I'm on my guard. I'm ready to fight.
Yep.
I go in guns blazing.
Yep, yep.
And with my arguments ready. And the first week we were there, I was thinking, oh, gosh, they've called me in for this meeting and I'm going to have to fight and fight and fight. Well, I didn't actually say a word for this whole meeting because the teacher sat me down and there was a couple support staff there. They sat me down and they said, okay, in this first week we have done all of these assessments, and they gave me the list. There was about 10 of them.
Mm.
We've done all of these assessments and we've determined that, you know, your girls need this and this. So this one's going to do this on these days and this one's going to do this on these days.
Oh my gosh.
And this daughter's going to get a full-time one-to-one aid while she's at school. The other one didn't need it. So that was okay. And she got I think there was about three or four kids in the class. And that suited her better. That was actually really good for her.
Mm.
So I just walked away going, I didn't have to fight for anything. It was just handed to me. Not to say that everywhere in the UK is the same and every school's the same, but wow, I was just blown away. I was so thankful. So, so thankful. So, yeah.
That must have been hard to leave that, wondering what you were going to go back to.
Absolutely. Yep. And when we got back, our school actually asked why, I'll call her Purple. Pinky didn't go back to their school, Purple and Pinky.
Yeah.
She and I said, well, you know, the lack of support, you know, she needs one-to-one full-time support if she's going to be in mainstream. And the response was, yeah, it's a real shame, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it is a shame.
Thanks.
So did you then put her into a special education setting then when you came back?
Yes. So she went into an SDS school first, which most people know is a school for those with
ID with an IQ of less than 50. Mm-hmm. And they started to accept kids who were more between 50 and 70. So we started off there. Beautiful school, absolutely wonderful. It just wasn't fitting right. And there was another school we hadn't actually looked at for some time that we ended up transferring her to after a couple of weeks. And that one worked out beautifully. Wow. It was a lovely, it was for kids with mild, even though she's actually just under that IQ of 50 at the time when she was assessed. It worked out beautifully. Lovely little kids. You know, the funny thing is when you have identical twins and you show up at the school, and when the other one would have a day off school for whatever reason and she'd come with me and all these kids would run up and it was so cute. They'd go, there are two
I can picture the whole thing. That's beautiful.
This one girl in particular, she'd just go racing around. There was a very little playground. Two pinkies.
Oh, how gorgeous.
And then my other twin would just be going, no, I'm purple. She's pinky.
Because they're so alike.
They were just absolutely identical.
Was that the first time you'd, the hair. Was that the first time you'd separate them in school? I think it is, but yes.
We'd held off for a long time for various reasons, and I'm glad we did the way we did things. She started off in the one twin who's more moderate ID, started off in mainstream. And then we moved quite young to the UK, so still in mainstream there, very supported. But then when we came back, we just knew the support wouldn't be there. We knew she wouldn't get, she really needed a lot of practical development and practical skills. And our schools are just not set up for that anymore.
Not at all.
They're not.
It's so academic.
Academic.
And you go and have all these tests and they say, you know, like for me, look how amazing this child is at this sort of problem solving, this specific tiny thing he can do three times beyond his year level. I'm like, do we have any of that at school? No.
No.
Like, well, that's fucking mint then. Thank you.
Good to know.
Yeah, great. I mean, it is good to know, and it's great for him in his life. But also, how about we put some of these things back into schools? Because this is what integration is.
And the irony is that a lot of when I moved Molly, a lot of her friends and her twin were jealous of the things she was doing at her special school. The amazing things they were doing. They're like, that school sounds fun.
And life skills.
That
and
still
life
skills. Happens.
How did they cope being separated?
Absolutely fine. They were fine. I was fine by that stage. I had gotten over my own kind of issues with it. You know, being identical twins too, you just have a picture of they're always going to be together, you know? Same school, same friends, maybe different classrooms at the same school.
Same
but,
ballet
you know,
classes, same netball team.
And, of course, we see them around.
Sure do.
My youngest plays on a sports team and there's an identical set of twins on that team. And, you know, I just get a little bit of a, every time I see them, I'm like, that's so cute, you know. But they're happy and they got what they needed. That was the important part. And it was just so much better for both of them.
It's a relief.
Absolutely.
One less thing to fight.
And so now I've got three in three different schools.
Yes.
Which is a interesting year.
So do you drop them all off, or do some have public transport, or how do you get them to school?
Luckily the SDS school has to the door bus.
Oh, amazing.
Amazing. They don't realize how amazing this actually is. Because in Victoria we had to I hope so.
Yeah.
Because in Victoria you had to walk down to the the mutual spot. Here, no. And it's a small bus, so it's a very short ride.
Right.
They only have mini buses.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. There's a dozen mini buses, but they're all mini. And whereas the other one she used to take was like an hour and a half to get home.
That is what Molly has. Exhausted. Not do anymore. It's too long.
It's too long.
Someone has to change that. It's terrible.
Yeah, well, someone does have to change that.
They do, because it's just.
And it's not like they're traveling you know, 40 kilometres.
No.
Travelling 8 kilometres drive. Or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes an hour and a half. Yeah. Come on, no more.
Well, and there's other considerations too. Like they use so much more energy to do the day-to-day things that we do that don't use as much energy.
That's right.
Yeah. And things like continence even. Yes. You know, you're sitting on a bus for an hour and a half at the end of the school day.
Yes. When you've raced to get to the bus.
Busting for the toilet. Busting. Yeah. And not allowed to eat on it.
Yeah.
So you can't even eat.
Yeah.
So
you're hungry.
A rice cracker.
Yeah. Hour and a half.
Yeah, I would get her off the bus absolutely hysterical pretty much every day for a couple of years. So I just, I've stopped it.
Yeah, and then that takes, what if you work? What if you need to work outside the home?
Yes.
What if your other children don't allow you, you know, to go and get those kids off the bus, to not put them on the bus? It's just not fair.
No, so door to door, I'm happy for you. That's brilliant.
Yep.
Life
it's so awesome. Yeah. And since working from home with all this COVID stuff happening, I've been doing telehealth from home. So my, you know, work, getting to work takes me 2 minutes.
Yes. And it's fantastic.
Yes.
That's right.
Yep.
Oh, it's made such, it actually made a huge difference to my own health and well-being,
of
I think.
Course.
And
some rest.
I would love to continue it forever.
Yeah, you might be able to. I mean, I do. Why can't you?
Oh, it lasts till the end of September. At this stage, Medicare will only allow those item numbers till the end of September.
Right.
So, but there are organizations that are really pushing for a relaxation of the use of Medicare item numbers because, for example, psychiatrists can use telehealth item numbers with virtually anyone. Whereas for anyone else in mental health, you've had to work with people in rural remote communities. Yeah. So it has to be defined by the Monash model, which is quite specific as to where these people have to live. So I'm hoping, because that's all been dropped at the moment, I'm hoping, especially when it comes to multiple births, disability, perinatal, you know, you're talking about people find it really hard to get to a clinic appointment.
Yes.
I would love, I do home visits. I try to do home visits when you know I can for people who are really struggling with that, but it would also be really handy to for lots of us to be able to continue accessing that.
Way
so fingers
less
crossed.
Confrontational. I mean, I always say to my families, I don't care if you're in your pajamas. I've had people sitting up in their beds. It's much better for
for
not
some
always,
people, it's
for
better.
For some people, it's better.
And so that's
threatening.
And aren't we trying to help them, not ourselves?
That's right.
So. Hopefully maybe there's can be some reforms brought about through this. I know lots of people who just work in the city, have a regular job or work in the suburbs, have just found themselves less stressed because
there's no commute.
No commuting. So
there's less time to listen to podcasts.
Much less time, which is not great.
That's okay. We don't mind.
I've fallen behind on my podcast listening.
We all have the time of the car
on my own anymore.
I've found mine's gone back up since the twins have gone to school.
So is mine a little bit.
I mean, not like what it was, but and I'm, you know, going down to work or doing things and I'm like, oh, I can listen to the podcast again. But anyway, off topic.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Can you tell us when you were sort of thinking about your work and how you got to the point of saying, I want to work in perinatal health? Or was that something you were doing before you had the kids, or has this shaped your work?
Yeah, no, I've been in the area for, I've been in sort of community and mental health for over 20 years. Yeah. So it's always been something that's been really interesting to me, and working with people. I love people's stories. I love hearing stories. Mm. And that's, I think that's always what draws me back, is trying to listen from the client's perspective and really trying to understand where they're coming from with non-judgmentally, you know, and being curious about where they're coming from. And I did it before I had the kids. I was working in inpatient and outpatient units. And it wasn't, it's not a big transition back. I think the one thing that is something I still can't do is birth trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I shy away from. Any surgery or birth trauma, I tend not to still do, because I'm still somewhat affected. And if this is triggering for anybody as well, you know, the Australian Birth Trauma Association is a wonderful resource. And there are people out there and therapists out there that can help you with that. So, yeah, that's something that I shy away from, but the rest of it, I'm all in.
Which is awesome, because I remember I went to, and I won't go into this, but I had a little bit of therapy in my mid-20s when I was trying to decide what Christianity looked like for me. And the first therapist that I went to had never been to church. So she was just like, this is all rubbish. What are you even saying? You know, like, and then the and then the next therapist I went to had left the Salvation Army Church, but still had fond memories of it. So she was able to just come at it from a completely different angle. And it, I just thought, I needed lived experience this time, because you can't explain this. And now I am just drawn to people who have had some of my lived experience. I'm not saying you have to. You don't have to have a baby to be a good obstetrician, or, you know. But sometimes I needed that connection.
Even when I start a consultation with a family and then I say my twins are 14, they go, you've got twins? And they've got twins, and then they're like, okay, they're with me.
Yeah, absolutely. I tend to, I don't divulge much with my clients, I do tend to tell
them. You're way more professional than me.
Well, we have different
That's right,
different
I know.
Yeah. Occupations.
I'm teasing.
Yeah. But when there's disability involved, I will usually divulge a little bit, not to take over the session and certainly not to make it about me, to allow them that opportunity to go, I get some of it. The only risk there, though, is because, you know, you have one experience of something doesn't mean everyone's had
that's
the same.
Exactly.
Lived experience is a funny thing. Like, I wanted a therapist when I was first going through this with my daughters and getting diagnosis and all that sort of stuff. I needed someone who really understood disability and couldn't find anyone. And maybe someone with a lived experience would have been helpful, because honestly, they don't teach it in university very well. Yeah. So I remember having like one class in disability, and I think I got like a 68% of it.
Well, you passed.
You passed.
I passed.
Now you got 1,000%.
Now you can write the course.
But so it's not taught very much, and you just don't, unless you've managed to work your way into that area. But we are taught to listen non-judgmentally and be curious. If you're taught well, that's the way you should be taught. But the thing is that I've had so many people come see me as a mental health clinician that have had the most horrendous experience with other clinicians who have said the most horrendous things to them. And I just think,
victims everywhere.
Where did these people get their licenses from? Like off the back of a cereal box? I don't know. So, yes, unfortunately, there's too much variability.
Well, there is. And it's
That's why it's a risk to go and start someone and think, if they're shit, and I've got to start again. That stops people
but
from
worth
accessing.
Doing. You know, if you date someone and they're shit, you get rid of them. So
true.
This is really important.
It is really important.
Just dump that therapist and find a new one.
Don't give them a second go.
No.
And you know what? I can usually pick that. Like when someone's come to see me and I'm getting that feeling, they'll come a couple of times, I'm like, they're not coming back. And it can be for a number of reasons. Yes. You know, it might have be something I've said or done, or my approach to things is not their style.
Yes. Yes.
Who knows? It could be a number of things that I'm doing. It could be a number of things that they're just not ready.
Yep.
Or they, you know, I remember one person telling me once, a guy who came and it was over a breakup, and he was grieving this breakup. And I had the same accent as his ex.
No good.
Oh no.
And he said, "I've given you 3 sessions, but I'm sorry, I just can't do this."
Yes. Wow.
Fair I'm like, enough. All right. I'm glad you were able to be open with me. And yeah. Say, I'm like, let's find triggers. You whoever you need. And if you don't want to try and work and use that as part of the therapy, that's fine. I'm totally on board. And that's okay. But it was so kind of funny. I'm like, you presume everything else, but an accent is not a.
Yes.
No, you don't.
Something you kind of think
can't
about.
Really change it.
What if you're wearing the perfume? No. Like, there's all sorts of things, isn't there?
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's so many things that can trigger, even the way you look, the way you sit, color that you wear. And some of that's completely unconscious.
Totally.
So it might be triggering for somebody who's had a history of trauma, for example, and you might be wearing a color that, you know, is related to that. Who knows? It could be so many different things. So, it's important to get a feel for someone. But if you don't get a feel, that's okay. There's lots of other people out there.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and the number of degrees they have doesn't necessarily mean that they're better either.
No, very true.
Just get a feel and ask lots of questions when you go. You know, what is your training? What sort of ongoing supervision do you have? How about your experience in this particular area? And what's your approach to therapy? Tell me about your approach to therapy. And so a lot of people don't ask me these questions when they come in. Yeah, and I'm surprised because I just think that's something that's just – they should be interviewing me. And so I often just give it to them and I tell them because I presume that's kind of what they're thinking. But it's something really important to ask.
And it's hard when you're feeling vulnerable or anxious to then the person who you're asking for help to then ask them, what's your story? You know, so I understand. But also if we normalize mental health, then we can also normalize the process of going in and finding out if, what that person's qualifications are and how it relates to you.
Now, I just wanted to ask, just your girls are now getting into the teen years, and what I think is desperately missing in this world, which I wish was a book talking about adolescence for girls or puberty for girls with an intellectual disability. So there is nothing. Indeed. I've been reading everything from mainstream, Millie. I've been trying all that. And I'm like, where is, apart from the book about actual puberty at the Royal Children's, there is nothing about how to engage friendship, how to handle puberty, you know, all those sorts of things. So I'm just putting it out into the world that you and I might write this one day. You know, I'm going to be so good at writing a book. Not. But I just think there's a gaping hole, and maybe there is one for boys as well with an ID. I don't know. But
I'm sure there is.
You know, I've just got the beautiful book I read. I can't remember what it's called. What's that
There's
one
called Secret Girls Business.
Yes, I've got that. But I just mean on a more – it needs. I need bigger than that. I need how do we help them have friendships? How do we – I just think there's a gaping hole to have – or to how to manage meltdowns, how to manage that sort of stuff, because there's a lot of talk about how to help our teenage girls, but not our teenage girls with an intellectual disability.
Well, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So even if that's in 3 or 4 years' time, because we will be through it, I don't know, but I need your expertise to help me do that. And if someone knows of one, let me know, but I can't find it.
No.
Yeah.
And I'm sick of reading about neurotypical teenage girls. Because I have one of them, but I also don't.
Yeah.
And there's nothing.
Other than the Secret Girls Business, I haven't come across a lot either.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
And I'm happy I've got, I've got that, but maybe a little bit. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, what do you think about that? Do you think that's needed? Do you need more literature? What?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been very open with my girls, much more so than you'd be with your neurotypical kids.
You have 100%. To. You've got to talk very, the truth.
Yeah.
The brutal
much
truth.
Much more pragmatic. I mean, I think some of my friends would just fall off their chairs.
Yeah. I know.
They
yeah,
learn,
sure.
Mine would. 100%.
We're not going to disclose much about
puberty. No, we will never go into that.
We never will, because that is their privacy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's something to parent.
It is something to parent through, and a book written by professionals who, like pediatricians and psychologists, and wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah.
And to just have a vague idea that you're doing it a little bit right.
Yeah.
You know, and when you have, for me, the fear is with boys that they will say something really inappropriate and not understand what that is.
Yes.
And other people say inappropriate things all the time, like they swear or whatever, but this is a different inappropriate.
Yes,
oh, my gosh, I just do head miles about
it. Yes, me too. Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, we diverse. We diversify on the podcast, and we're not supposed to be talking about that.
Are you there? We've lost you.
Are you back?
Hello.
Oh,
yeah,
there you go.
You're back.
Sorry, I don't know what happened.
Oh, I don't know. Do you know what happened? My computer was sitting for so long it turned itself off.
Oh, maybe.
And it's like you're still not chatting.
Even the computer was bored.
It's like Netflix. Are you still watching?
Yeah.
Are you still there?
I am.
I'm still
here.
Password.
All right. Well,
maybe we should.
The password wrong.
I'm leaving this in. It's funny. Maybe we should. Maybe we should wrap it up. But it's been so great, and we will get you back.
Have we missed anything though?
Yes.
That you wanted to talk about?
Do you know what? There's one thing I wanted to talk about, just briefly, is something that happened at the end of last year that really hit home for me, and I don't know what to do with this, and it'd be interesting to hear what other peas think of it and their comments. Is that I went to Purple's dance concert, and she has danced for many years. And at this concert, there was an older girl who was at the same school, different class, with Down syndrome.
Yep.
And so she was doing her dances. My daughter came out and did her dance. And what I noticed was at the end of this other girl's dances that she did, and at the end of the night, they gave her an award because she'd been there for like 15 years or something dancing.
Yeah.
And they gave her some extra awards and stuff. And at the end of every dance that this other girl was in, boy, the applause was just huge. It was just huge for this girl. And I just felt so happy for her, really happy. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks that, you know, my daughter is probably, they're probably very, very similar in terms of learning ability and in terms of physical ability, very, very similar. And yet, because obviously it's more invisible for my daughter, you look at her and you will not think anything different until you're trying to teach or, you know, have a conversation. And I felt like, oh, is she... She's not getting recognized for the hard, hard work that she's done.
That makes me want to cry.
Do you know?
Yes. I do know.
And I was teary. I was teary thinking, what do I do with that? I don't know. Like, I don't want her to be obvious in some ways, but at the same time, I don't want her to feel like, you know, she's not getting the recognition for the ridiculously hard work that she's putting into doing. Some very simple, more simple things that wouldn't take us as much to do in a dance. So, that was one thing that came to mind today that I thought, I just wanted to mention that.
You shared that.
Yeah, really powerful. I'm grateful. I think of that often.
And the only other things was I just wanted to quickly mention that for hyperemesis, if anyone is struggling with that, there is the HER Foundation, the Hyperemesis Education Resource Foundation. It's hyperemesis.org. If you go to Google and just look that up, you'll figure out how to spell
Aka
that.
Aka will magically,
thank you, Aka.
Aka will put in the show notes. It's magic.
Awesome. and it's fantastic, and it has guidelines as well. It is American, but we don't have the guidelines here in Australia, so it's at least a start.
Okay.
And the research is on there around the genetic causes.
Yep.
The other thing is PANDA. Knowing about panda.org.au, which I'm sure you've mentioned previously, for anyone with
parent. I read it a long time ago, but
for anxiety or depression, for women and men. There's a dedicated men's line now as well for the dads.
Oh, good.
Yep. Yeah, and 1 out of 10 dads in, get postnatal depression.
Yes.
And 1 out of 20 get it antenatally. So many more women than men, but still, they're there. So they have dedicated men.
Yeah, I wonder what it is with
Good question.
Birth. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Multiple births, you know, you just level up like in a video game. So I would say it's higher.
Yeah, hands down. Absolutely.
Yep. Oh, thank you. That's important.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so thanks. Great to talk to you. We've been waiting so long.
This is the best.
Because our beautiful friend was going to fly down and talk to us, but of course, COVID. Now we're all separated. Anyway, we are going to get on to our cry difference laugh. Did anything make you cry this week, Lisa?
So my twins are now preteen, heading into teenage years, and we're still dealing with fecal incontinence. Mm. And it was a particularly bad week last week, a really bad week of that. Mm. And that just by the end of the week kind of broke me a bit, to be honest. Yep. That was my cry.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking about that.
Yeah, thank you. I know we've had I've had a few little messages about that.
We've done so much.
I bet.
And the last time we went to a pediatrician only a couple months ago, I said to her, look, this is what we're doing. This is what I understand about it. Do you recommend anything else? She goes, no, you're doing everything. You know what you're doing. Yeah. So I'm like, wait, I'm paying $450
for
it.
It's just time.
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, we're doing everything for that. Don't get me wrong. But, it still sometimes catches us off guard and it just seems like no rhyme or reason. Yes. And when that's the case, it's really hard. It gets hard.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. What about you, Mandy?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't cried this week, but I'm anticipating that I'm going to cry when I go because I've booked myself in to see a psychologist.
Oh, yeah, you're going to cry.
So it's anticipatory.
Sorry,
crying.
But you are.
Well, I went to the GP the other day and I'm like, my skin, I've got dermatitis all over me, all through my bum, TMI. I just said to her, look, let's go back over the mental health plan. I've got to go and see someone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I'm all booked in. I message her. It's not going to be till the 2nd of July. I'm like, damn it.
I know.
But actually that is 2 days before the girl's birthday.
Yeah.
So, traditionally that's the week where I'm more vulnerable.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to talking her head off.
Yeah.
Good.
And
good
I said, I messaged her and said, if any availabilities come up beforehand, any cancellations, let me know. I said, I'm ready to go.
Yep. Good.
So I haven't had therapy for a little while. I want to work on a few things. I want to also work on my resilience.
Yep.
According to the podcast, when I'm criticized.
Yes.
So I want to talk about that as well.
Yeah.
So that I can get some tools because this is a big deal being put out into the world and I'm proud of it.
Yes,
and I'm
so
going to keep doing it. But if people are going to be cross with me about things I say, then I'm going to need help.
Yeah, because you own them
it.
And you know what you're
of
saying.
Of course I do.
And everyone has a different opinion. And at the moment, it's so easy as a keyboard warrior to.
Yeah, so I need help with that.
Yeah.
So that it just doesn't just. Yeah.
Self-compassion comes to mind. Just, really working on that self-compassion around that when that does happen.
Mm. Yes.
Absolutely.
My body just takes over and I can't really cope with it. So I'm going to have to because I've put myself out into the world.
Yeah.
So, they'll be crying in a couple of weeks. I'll have a lot to say that week.
I'll just edit half an hour. Don't worry. Sure. No, I'm joking. We won't.
Okay.
So what made me cry this week was on Friday night, this didn't make me cry, but on Friday night, Workboy Kieran, who doesn't like being called Workboy Kieran, but he doesn't listen anymore, so who cares?
Ah.
I can call him what I want. His family owns a beach house and he's living in it doing his final bit of medicine, like his final year.
Ah.
So he's like, you can come down. So Lorraine and I and number one daughter and her boyfriend went down for the night, which was so nice to be out of the house.
Oh.
Anyway, and he just said to me in passing, he's like, are you watching Normal People on Stan? And I was like, no, I haven't read the book and I feel like I shouldn't. And he's like, well, you're going to love it.
Okay.
And when someone who really knows you.
Yes.
I was like, okay,
you listen to them.
Cry, sobbing. I can't get through the episodes. Mm-hmm. I have to stop, regroup. I love it. It doesn't relate to my life in any way, so I don't even know why I love it. I know it's set in Ireland and I went to Trinity with my dad.
That's something,
But I don't even think it's all that. I just think it's that when you wish you'd said something and you hadn't, and I don't know what it is, but it's, and I said to him, I just messaged, he's like, this makes me weep. He's like, yeah, every episode. I'm like, okay,
oh,
all right.
Okay, all right. That's what it is.
So I didn't really know what it was when I got into it. Yes, but it's been, it's really made me proper cry.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah. Better get onto it.
Yeah. And Lisa, has anything made a difference in your life this week?
Kids going back to school.
Oh, yeah, baby.
I have to admit, we went back a few weeks. We're in the third week already, or fourth week even.
Yeah.
And so it's not this week, but oh gosh, that's made a huge difference.
Yeah, it's still making a difference.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And for you guys, it's just starting.
It's the second week to go back.
Yeah. Yes.
It still feels like a dream. Yeah.
But when this episode comes out, we'll only have another week and it's holidays.
I know. Oh, but that's all right.
That's all right.
It's going to be true holiday, though, without pandemic breakout.
Yeah,
and that's what happened in the Easter holidays.
When we were at homeschooling, that was not holidays.
No.
So this
and the holidays before it was everything pandemic. Was
yes.
unfolding.
And
so
we were
it was
anxious.
Very anxious.
Yeah.
All right. And what about you, Mandy?
I watched Becoming with Michelle Obama.
I haven't watched it.
Oh, it's pretty amazing.
Okay.
She's an amazing woman. I just missed her, even though I'm not American. But my God, you must miss her over there.
Yes, they must.
Just stunning. It was fantastic to watch.
Okay.
Also, I just want to give a shout out to Deanne on Twitter, whose mum, Pam, listens to us. So this is a shout out to Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Who listens to Two Peas in a Podcast. Now, Pam is living with dementia.
Yep.
And she loves us.
Aww.
I know. Aww. And Pam. So her daughter tweets about how much Pam loves listening to us and how much of a difference that makes. She laughs.
Aww.
And so Deanne has posted this week about, has there been any research into people living with dementia and the effect of podcasts on their quality of life.
Wow.
And so people were retweeting us and I was just extremely chuffed and I promised her a big shout out.
Aww.
So, Pam, we love that you listen to us.
We do.
And it makes me want to cry.
Yeah,
so,
I have got tears in my eyes.
Thank you for listening to Two Peas.
Yeah.
And our ridiculousness sometimes.
I know.
Yeah, so shout out to you.
Shout out, Pam. All right, so my difference this week is for a couple of weeks, you've probably heard at the start of the podcast that we have a thing called Acast Supporter now.
Yes. Oh, my word.
And it's just a little thing that you can give a donation if you want. It's not an ongoing thing. Just, you know, if you've got $2, you can give it or you don't have to. And the great thing is nothing's going to change whether you give it or not.
No.
Anyway, I was telling Buzz and Woody coming home from school in the car that people had given us money. And
amazing.
I said, I can't believe.
Yes.
That people have given us money and we can pay the sound engineer and we can pay for the show notes and we can – I can't believe it, right?
Yes.
No one's ever given me money.
No.
You know, except when I've worked my ass off for it. So, anyway, and so they were so proud. I just couldn't believe how proud they were.
Yes.
And then Woody's like, well, you know why? And I was like, no. He's like, because people are sick of being discriminated against.
Oh.
And so then I was like, I started to get teary. And Buzz follows it up with, you know what it's like, Mum? It's like when you're at school. This makes me cry and my difference. It's like when you're at school and you have no idea what's going on and you feel all alone. And then you meet someone else who has no idea and you feel better. You're together. You're not knowing, but you're still together. Oh. That's you and Mandy, Mum. Oh. You don't know anything, but you know it together.
Oh.
And he goes, and everyone else who doesn't know anything loves being with you.
Oh,
so I couldn't get out of the car. I was laughing and crying.
That's just basically sum up the podcast.
Basically sums up the podcast. So
it's out of the mouth of babes.
Yep. So anyway.
How precious.
Yeah. I'll wipe away those tears.
Oh, stop.
What made you laugh, Lisa?
We had a conversation over dinner last night that was really funny. So my daughter, who's at the SDS school, has very limited language and sometimes, you know, it's hard for her to describe things. And she was telling us that she lost her hat and proceeded to tell us that this boy threw the hat in the boys' toilets. I said, oh, did he throw the hat in the boys' toilets? No. Oh, okay, you just said that he threw the, yeah, threw the hat in the boys' toilets. Just no. And then she proceeded to say, try to tell me that it was maybe on the roof of the boys' toilets. Ah. So I said, okay. So did he throw the hat up over the, onto the roof? No. Is it in the boys' toilets? Yes. Is it on the roof? Yes.
It's just like, my whole dinner time. I'm looking at her.
Where's the hat?
She's laughing. We're laughing. I'm like, oh. I don't know where your hat is, Allie. She's like, I don't know. So it's so somewhere cute. On the school grounds, possibly around the boys' toilets.
Oh, so cute.
So cute.
But just her, I don't know. Like, she'll just all come right. out with this at the end.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's the ending to away. Every yeah. conversation, really. Yeah. You can't explain it.
Yeah. We'll find it. We'll find your hat. It's all good. It.
Yeah. Sweetheart, so funny.
And what about you, Maggie?
Oh, she's gorgeous.
We're leading up to their birthday and I'm trying to talk about what do you want to do on the day and I was just on my bed, I don't know what I was doing, probably just checking Facebook or something, and Molly comes running in. She goes, I know, 18 nuggets for lunch.
Oh, yes.
Because the ad for McDonald's is talking about 18 nuggets. Yeah. She said, 18 nuggets for my lunch for my birthday.
Oh.
I said, done. Absolutely. Done. I don't need to organize a party. I don't need cakes. I'm just getting the 18 nuggets. She keeps saying it. And now, but then Millie came in and said, you know, you can get a 24 pack.
Oh.
And so now this morning she's like, 24 pack nuggets. I just thought that is so funny.
Oh, that is so.
And
so.
I also laughed at Big Brother because it is back. And yeah. I took a little time to get into it because I thought this is not the old style Big Brother. But I did watch the other night and they had people having to go into a room and face their fears in the Ginger Dread House.
Oh, Ginger Dread.
It was a gingerbread house, but yeah, it was called the Gingerbread House. Yep. Anyway, the first girl went in, but before, and they said you're going to be facing your fears. And she was in the lounge room area going, oh, no, I'm scared of knees. I'm scared of knees.
Knees?
Yeah. And so they put her in and she's like, I'm scared of knees. And they put four people's knees into the room and she had to look at them and touch them.
Wow.
It's just so funny and ridiculous.
I wonder what that is called.
Lisa, look it up. But yeah. And she had to touch the knees. She had to rub like moisturizer lotion. And she's like, they're hairy.
I wonder if that was a good cognitive behavior therapy for her and she's has it tipped her over the edge and she's
conquered it.
It's called flooding.
They flooded her with the knees. They flooded a girl who's scared of dogs with this beautiful poodle. You can see everyone going, what the heck? Go in and cuddle that dog.
Yeah.
Anyway, the knees.
It's real.
I've never heard it seen anything like it. It was, I couldn't stop laughing.
It does have a name.
Oh,
tell me.
It has a name. Genuphobia.
Oh.
Well, there you go. It's real.
Yeah.
I could tell she was upset and distressed.
If I went on Big Brother, I'd be like, I'm terrified of donuts. I just don't ever want them. I think I can conquer this. I think I can touch it. No way. Why did they tell the truth? Yeah, terrified of dogs. Yeah.
The knees.
I really hate goldfish.
I know. Haven't people worked this out by now?
Oh, come on.
And the last little laugh just happened before. Mm. So I messaged Arka, who does our show notes, and I said to her, Kate and I are talking now about paying you to doing the show notes, right? We've paid everybody else.
Yep.
We're going to keep paying the sound engineer, and she said, oh, I don't know what to say. I hope that I'm the last on the list of people that needs to be paid. And I wrote, you are actually. She wrote back with laughter. I just thought that was so funny.
Yeah, it was so funny.
But anyway, we're thrilled that we can give her because it takes a lot of time.
Thank you for giving us money because it actually means we can't just keep asking people to do things for nothing.
That's right. And we want to honor that.
Yeah,
so
it's been amazing. Yeah. And my laugh is that we have this amazing doctor who I won't tell you his name, who emails Mandy and I from the Royal Children's Hospital.
Yes.
And he's going to one day, when everything, if it ever goes back to normal, we will do the podcast from there. But anyway, he changes his signature, right? So it looks all like he's got about 3,000 letters after his name or whatever.
Gosh.
But if you look at it, it says professional outer rectum. It just makes me laugh. So thank you for making us laugh this week. I told him he made us laugh.
Dr. Professional outer rectum.
And he tells us when he's a rectum.
He does. He told us a good one.
He did tell us a good one, which we won't repeat. It's his story.
No, that's
but,
right.
But we'll just put him on the spot when we go to the Royal Children's. But
that made me laugh a lot.
So much laughter.
Professional from the outer rectum.
Outer rectum.
They're so funny. So smart.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And then, yeah. It's lovely to see someone with so many letters sort of take the piss
out
of
himself. One day he's going to accidentally send that to somebody else.
I know.
And then I'll really laugh.
And then we will laugh. Oh, well, well done, guys. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
This episode will help a lot of people.
It really will.
I know it. So,
thank you so much. No, it's been great. It's good to catch up with you too.
Yeah, we love you and we're so thankful you're in our lives.
Really,
and thank you.
Same.
Yeah.
Congratulations on everything.
And
I think this has just been fantastic.
We made this for you. So just so you know that, we made this podcast for you.
Yeah, we really did.
Yeah.
Yeah, for everybody. Yeah. I mean, it's just thank you so much for continuing on with this. You know, especially when, you know, there can be some bumps along the way.
Yes.
I'm so glad you're heading forward and just keep going, because it is very helpful to so many people. So, and I'm one of them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. See you everyone.
Next week,
bye.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.